At Betway, we've signed football royalty, Thierry Henry. Join us and discover a world of exclusive content, offers and winning moments. 18 plus T's and C's apply. Bet the responsible way. Gamblerware.org.
I'd like to give a heartfelt thank you to our sponsor, Dr. Bradley Nelson, New York Times bestselling author to The Emotional Code and The Body Code. Dr. Nelson's work is transforming lives worldwide, and we are grateful for his support in today's episode. Now, today, on The Advisor with Stacey Chalemi, we're thrilled to welcome Diane Eyre, founder of Hawaii Disability Legal Services, LLC, a mission-driven law firm focused on Social Security Disability, SSI, and veterans' disability benefits, serving clients with excellence and through the heart. Now, to learn more, I want you to go to her website, and it's hawaiidisabilitylegal.com. And Diane, welcome to the show. Could you say hello to everybody, tell them a little about yourself and what you do?
Well, hello. I am super excited to be here today. So what I do is I am an attorney and I represent people for Social Security, SSI, and VA disability. But I do it in one of the most amazing places on the planet. I live in Hawaii. I do this on all the Hawaiian islands. I also do it in our Pacific territories. So for those who don't know, that's American Samoa, that's the Northern Marianas, and that's Guam. And I also represent the Philippines, and I represent people in some of the other countries in the region. And the reason for that is we send percentage-wise more people into the military than any of the U.S. states on the mainland. And that includes Guam is the highest sender of folks into the military. The Philippines is also actually really high. But we also have a whole lot of people out here who are just, in fact, disabled and need help. So I represent people in all these areas. I help them get the money they need and the medical insurance that they need to take care of themselves long term so that they can continue to live out here. And that includes the folks from here, Hawaiians, Chamorans, Samoans, Filipinos, and it includes others as well, our other local populations, to ensure that they have what they need to continue to live here and to continue to thrive.
Oh, I love that. Now, for listeners new to this space, what's the simplest way to explain the difference between SSDI and SSI, who are typically qualifies for each?
So Social Security disability, believe it or not, every single one of us who is working is paying disability insurance premiums. It's not welfare and it's not a government handout. We're actually being forced, whether you want to or not, you are paying into long-term disability insurance. That actually is the Social Security Disability Program. So provided you've worked on average about 10 years over your lifetime, less if you're younger, and provided you've worked about five of the last 10 years, you're insured for Social Security disability if anything happens to you. It doesn't mean they're going to give it to you easily, but you're insured for it. SSI is our needs-based program, and it is available to everyone on the U.S. mainland and everyone in the U.S. states. For the territories, it is only available to folks in the Northern Marianas. It's what protects our kids. So if you have a kid who is born with Down syndrome, a kid who is born gravely disabled, provided that you have need, meaning you're not independently wealthy, that kid can be covered with SSI. Once the kid turns 18, that kid can still be covered with SSI. It's also for folks who haven't been working. So say you spent an awful lot of time the last 7-8 years in college, and surprise, surprise, you'll be eligible for SSI, probably not SSDI if you haven't been working. If you were a stay-at-home mom, provided you don't have a spouse that's working and earning money, you're a stay-at-home single mom, you could be eligible for SSI if you suddenly become disabled. This is our needs-based arm. It's harder to get because you have to have the need, but it's there as well. And like I said, it's not available to folks in the territories except for the Northern Marianas, regardless of whether you're a U.S. citizen or not.
I feel like a lot of times there are things out there available to lots of people that are entitled for disability, who have a disability, but we just don't know about it. We don't know what our insurances, entitle us to, or what the laws entitle us to, and it's hard. I think that's why it's great to have somebody like yourself who, specializes with disability, because there are a lot of things out there too that people just don't re know that they exist.
You're absolutely right. I mean, most people actually don't know about Social Security Disability Insurance. That's its full name. They assume that Social Security Disability or just disability benefits are just for people gaming the system. Or there's the other side of the equation where they assume that, they become disabled, they're automatically going to be taken care of. And the truth is, these benefits are out there for us if we become disabled. So, if I wake up tomorrow, I have stage four cancer, I'm not going to be able to work, I'm going to have to go through chemo, I'm going to have to go through radiation, I'm going to have to go through surgery, I'm going to be out of work for more than a year. That's what Social Security disability is for. But I have to apply for it and I have to be accepted. So these benefits are out there for people who get in the car accident, who wake up disabled. And then there's the VA disability benefits. And I will say, there's not enough, but there are more of those than there are for just regular folks who become disabled. So, our veterans become disabled. There's the VA disability benefits that help them with money to live on every month. There's also other VA benefits that people may or may not know about. There's the GI Bill for education, there's the home loans for owning a home. When our veterans become homeless, there's actually a way to fast track getting them housing. I won't say it always works, but there's the HUD-VASH programs, the Section 8 programs specifically for vets, to help them get into housing. There's VA medical care. So I will say, theoretically, every veteran is eligible for VA medical care. I say theoretically because there can be an amount you have to pay if you make a lot of money. But go down to your VA, just sign up for it if you served because you are eligible. And you never know when you're going to need it. So it's kind of nice to have that in your back pocket, even if you think you'll never use it. There are plenty of folks who get their prescriptions from the regular doctor and fill them at VA because there's no copay. Yeah, there's a lot of benefits out there that people just don't know about.
I definitely believe it. Now, what are some of the top three mistakes applicants make that delay their approvals?
Top three mistakes. First of all, no matter how disabled you are, you cannot be working and earning at the moment. It's a little bit over $1,600 a month gross. I hate to say it, no matter how disabled you are, no matter how disabled you feel you are, if you're working full time, if you're earning, more than $1,600 a month gross, you just don't qualify. It's a technical denial. And there's nothing we can do to get you approved. And this is for the Social Security programs. Another mistake with both programs, not going to the doctor. Even if you think the doctor can't help you, even if you know the doctor can't help you, you've got something long term, you still have to document it. The programs still need to see the medical evidence. They still need to see what the doctor says. Don't trust them to send, or don't trust them to send them to send you to their doctor. It doesn't mean it'll be favorable. It doesn't mean they'll send you to the type of doctor that knows what condition you have and knows how to describe it. You need to go to the doctor. The other big thing is not filling out everything they send you because you just assume you're going to get approved because you feel like you're sick enough. You got to stay on top of it.
I gotta say, I get so upset sometimes because I've seen people that, they really don't have a lot of income coming in, and they get rejected because of the amount of money that is coming in. They say it's just too high. People have had a little bit over the 1600 mark, or if they do Medicare, I think it was, they had too much in the bank. They barely had anything in the bank, but in their eyes, it was like, oh, that's too much. You don't qualify. And I feel that it's so unfair. And like we were talking about earlier, what happens to the people who, maybe their husband served or their wife served and they pass, and then the spouse is by themselves and they can't work, something's happened and they can't bring in money, or even those extra benefits could even help them so they can have, adequate living, and they don't get it because of the way the law is set up.
This is really hard. So a lot of these limits, they haven't changed since the 90s. For SSI, you can't have more than $2,000 in the bank. That is not a safety net. I don't think there's anywhere in the country that that is a safety net, but you can't have more than $2,000 in the bank at any point in time, because you'll get thrown off the program or you just won't get on it. And I hear you about just the little bit over the $1,600 a month, because I've seen it, and it's they just do a little bit of overtime and all of a sudden they're over. They're losing their benefits or they're losing that month. And I'll say to your point too about the spouses, this is a different subject, but one of the things that I see too is I get calls from veteran spouses. Their veteran has died. The military retirement has stopped. The VA disability has stopped. They can't afford the mortgage payment. They don't know what's going to happen. The truth is, there is not a whole lot out there for spouses.
Yeah, there isn't.
No, there really isn't. You got to get your estate planning set up early. And your veterans, the folks that served, they need to really understand that you got to take care of your spouse in case something happens. I mean, that person who stood by you while you were serving, who couldn't have a career because you moved every 3 years, there's not a whole lot for them once you pass.
And that's an important factor, I think. I know we got a little off the topic for a second, but that is an important factor because I've seen that happen so many times to people. And you really do have to plan. It's so important. And a lot of people don't plan, or they wait till the very last minute, and that last minute is too late. So it really is important to take a step up and plan these things as soon as possible. That way, you never know what the next day may bring. They're set up, everything is good, and that person is protected.
You're absolutely right. And I think it goes for kids too. And this is not on the veteran subject. This is on the your child subject. So if you have a disabled child, one of the things that they don't give you is what the heck to do when the kid turns 18. Or if he did give it to you, you're in the exception, because I still hear this all the time. Your child turns 18, and how do you set up for when you pass? And really, it is if your child is never going to work and never going to marry, setting them up with Social Security benefits, getting them on SSI, getting them over to disabled adult child benefits if you pass, or if you become retired or disabled, getting their special needs trust in place. So if anything happens to you, that child is taken care of long term and has the money to live on that won't interfere with their benefits. And it really is the SSI program and also the disabled adult child program through SSDI that will sustain your child for the rest of their life and make sure they don't end up in the homeless shelter. Because unfortunately, if you don't take care of it, that's exactly where a lot of these kids end up until they're found, until things can be sorted out, which can take a couple of years.
That's very true. I don't think a lot of people realize that, though. That's so true. Now, how should someone document medical evidence, effectively, treating physician notes and, the RFC forms, and test results, to strengthen a claim?
Well, the first thing I'd say is keep going to the doctor. So I know I talked about the importance of going to the doctor, but keep going to the doctor. Just going once is not enough. You've got to keep going. You've got to document it's ongoing. If you don't go, they will decide you got better. It doesn't matter if that's true or not. It doesn't matter what the condition is. These government programs will decide you've gotten better, and that's why you no longer need to go. You mentioned RFC forms. So there are forms that you can take to your doctor that document how long can you walk. So these are physical disabilities. How long can you walk? How long can you stand? How much can you lift? How many days of work would you miss per month? That sort of thing. Get those filled out, because that's going to help both Social Security and VA decide how disabled you are. They're both based on how much you can work. For the mental health, it'll document how long you can concentrate, how long you can focus. But like I said, this is good for both programs. VA disability is actually a percentage reduction you have in being able to effectively work. Social Security, the big question is, can you work full time? Yes or no?
And so many people too. I've seen so many people either they served in the military or even something traumatic has happened and their mental health has declined tremendously. And now they can't work and they have a problem. And I think it's so important that people really keep up with it because people sometimes they'll go once to the doctor or twice to the doctor and they're sick of going to the doctor, but it's so important that they maintain, a relationship with their doctors and everything is documented. So like you said, they can, actually, if they're looking for a specific type of coverage or help, they have a better chance of getting it.
That may be the only chance they have of getting it, honestly. So Social Security and VA have doctors, and I've heard this before. One of my pet peeves is doctors or medical health professionals that won't give medical records because those you also need for your case. I mean, you're going to the doctor in part for the medical records to substantiate your case. And part of that is because the doctors that VA will send you to or Social Security will send you to, some of them are actually really good. But some of them either aren't or are not in the specialty that you need. They're not going to document what you need. You're going to get turned down because of that, or you're going to get not approved because of that. You need your own medical evidence. You need to, even though it's the hardest time in your life to do it, you need to advocate for yourself. And you need to advocate for yourself by getting the medical evidence because no one can do that for you, including me.
That's so true. Now, can you walk us through the appeals timeline from the reconsideration to the ALJ hearing and where a lawyer adds the most value?
I will say I actually like to start the process. So a lot of lawyers will say they only pick up cases at the hearing level. There are those of us who want to start the process. I will say I only do this in Hawaii and out in the Pacific. But I like to get started with my clients. And that's so, first of all, I can talk to them about the things they need to do about going to the doctor. I can give them the RFC forms and help them get those filled out. We can get the case started. We can get everything in there. When Social Security sends them forms to fill out, we can do those together so that nothing is done wrong. I want to start the process. I want to be with you throughout the entire process. That said, I have plenty of people who have not done that, who've been given bad advice, who've started the process, who were told by somebody else, "Oh, well, a lawyer will only help you at the end." I can usually almost always fix things if I have to. I prefer not to have to. I prefer to start the process, but if I have to, I can jump in later. We can fix what's happened if things need fixing. But the truth is, the average person is going to be doing, this is awful. The average person is going to be going after Social Security benefits for about 2.5 years. That's the time we're in right now. Whether it's SSI or Social Security disability, the average person, including those with active cancer, are going to be fighting for it for about 2.5 years. One of the nasty truths with Social Security disability, it comes with Medicare medical insurance. And I know we've all heard a lot about Medicare over the last few years, Medicare for all these great things. The truth is, Medicare doesn't kick in until 2.5 years after your disability onset date, 29 months after Social Security recognizes that you became disabled. So you're going to have to make do with some other type of medical insurance. Hopefully, you qualify for Medicaid. In this climate, less and less people are going to qualify for Medicaid, but hopefully you do because that's what's going to cover the gap. And if you continue to qualify for it after you get Medicare, that's what's going to cover the co-pays and the premiums because even though you're awarded Medicare, you still have to pay for it, including you have to pay medical insurance premiums for Medicare and you have to pay the co-pays. So if you can get Medicaid, that's what's going to pay for that. And if you can't, it's going to come out of your disability benefits, which, by the way, average about $1,500 a month. And those are not tax-free. They're only
That's
tax-free if you don't make enough money. I'm sorry.
no, I just said that's horrible. It really is. Go ahead.
I was just going to say the new law didn't change that, by the way.
Oh, really?
Not the disability program.
How do work attempts and concepts like substantial gainful activity, the SGA, affect eligibility?
So SGA, that's where I was saying if you're making more than about $1,600 a month, you're just not going to qualify. That's SGA. So SGA is substantial gainful activity. It's basically working. It also means just working. One of the hard things with the disability programs is they're always complaining about, people not getting off them. They do have the ticket to work to help you get back to work. They do allow you work attempts. But they do make it really hard if you're trying to work. So once you start making over $1,600 a month gross, you can do that for about 8 months. On the ninth month, you're going to get kicked off your benefits. If you're doing it before you're awarded disability, because like I said, it takes about 2.5 years to get on, it does make it harder to get on disability, and you only have up to 6 months to try it out. The nice thing about being able to try it out is, after a month or two, if you can't do it, you stay on disability and your benefits remain intact. But it does make it kind of hard to to get back to work because you're always afraid in the back of your mind of losing your benefits.
And that's a terrible feeling. That's a scary feeling. It really is.
Am I
Now,
ready to take the gamble?
exactly. Now, overpayments and continuing disability reviews, scare people. What are some proactive steps that that they can take to avoid the surprises?
They scare me too. Okay, continuing disability reviews. Please don't stop going to the doctor after you've been approved. And now I realize I'm also talking to the group that I was originally talking to who's not going to the doctor because there's either nothing they can do or there's nothing you believe they can do, whatever the case, but you can't stop going after you're approved either. You have to keep going. If you don't have the medical documentation, they're going to throw you off. Because, yeah, once again, you're going to have to trust their doctor to find you disabled. And you can think, my disability is so bad, there's no way. Want to bet?
It's so true.
Overpayments? File that waiver. You can file a waiver and an appeal at the same time. It's not a choice of one or the other, file both. The waiver is saying, I spent all the money on my basic living expenses and I can't afford to pay it back. Doesn't matter if you're at fault or not, you might be totally not at fault. File the waiver anyway. Because fault doesn't matter with a waiver. Get that in as insurance. File your appeal too if you believe you're not at fault. And a lot of the time, honestly, you're not actually at fault. So file both. They strike fear in me as well, but just, I know it's the time you're least able to do it, but you gotta get the paperwork in.
It's so true. What are some myths about disability benefits that you wish everyone would understand and like is like everyone would retire retire for good like people think that oh if I can retire for good and I'll be fine and all there are a lot of myths out there that people don't understand when they think about disability they think that they're hitting the pot of gold and it's not always true.
Tired of that. You would think the welfare queen myth had been put to bed by now. Like I said, it's going to average about $1,500 a month. VA disability, without dependents, it's going to be around a little over 3,000 a month for 100%. The average is actually 10%, which is a couple hundred bucks. You're not going to get wealthy off these programs. You're just not. People who are, oh, my neighbor, he's making all this money. It ain't coming from the disability programs. You can argue with me all you want. No way. Ain't happening. These programs may not even sustain you. Here where I live in Hawaii, SSI, the needs-based program, you can't even pay rent for your own place on this. Not without help from another source. It's barely enough to live on. So the fact that people are earning serious money off this, no, it's not the government programs. But another one I really want to put to rest. The law was changed in 2017. So I get a lot of 100% disabled vets thinking it's a no-brainer. Of course they're going to get Social Security disability. Nope. Social Security isn't even allowed to look at your disability rating. They're required to look at everything underneath it. So get your entire VA disability file into your Social Security file. Do it. Do it, even if Social Security tells you they don't need it. Do it no matter what. Your attorney's telling you no problem, no bother, don't do it. Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it. They have to look at everything it's based on. And the reason I'm telling you that is I have found so much pushback from the Social Security programs in approving my 100% disabled vets. It's no secret that they're running out of money. It's not our fault that they're running out of money. We have a lot of disabled folks. We are still paying in. We're still paying our premiums every month. They do need to figure out how to make the program solvent. There are ways they can do it that they haven't done yet. But it's definitely not supposed to be on the backs of our 100% disabled veterans. And the reason why I'm saying this at length, I have seen so many 100% disabled veterans being turned down for benefits. You can't convince me that that isn't part of the equation. You just can't. It's not officially part of the equation. It's just a pattern I have seen consistently with multiple ALJs starting since about 2018. I don't know if it's been personal bias or institutional bias, but there has been a reticence to approve 100% disabled veterans. So make it as hard as you can for them to turn you down. They won't look at your rating. That's not something that's going to help you get approved. It will expedite your claim, and that's it. Get your disability file into your Social Security disability file. That's what's going to help you.
I like that. Now, if someone was denied, what's the next best move that they could do to turn a no into a yes?
Appeal it.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is, nearly the majority get turned down when they first apply.
Yeah.
The first appeal, it's around 80% get turned down.
Yeah.
The second appeal is where most people are going to get approved. But I also want to reinforce this because a lot of people don't find this out either. If you're turned down at an ALJ hearing, you have four more appeals. Even
Oh,
if your
really?
attorney doesn't want to do it, find someone who does. You have four more appeals, one more before the administration, and you have three in federal court. These cases go to the Supreme Court every year. There are tons of these cases in federal court. They get remanded by the federal court. You have a lot of appeals, so keep appealing. If you reapply, it's harder to get approved because you have this denial hanging over you. It changes by area of the country that you're in the area I'm in, you have to prove that something's changed since your last denial. And that can be really difficult. So just keep appealing. And if you keep getting no's on appealing, keep asking, keep looking, keep going.
Now, if you had to take today's conversation, you wanted to emphasize on some important factors, what are some of the things you'd like the listeners to walk away with today?
If you're disabled, apply for benefits. That's one of the big things. That this is not a welfare program, that this is something that you've been paying into. If you need it to sustain you for the rest of your life or just for a year or more while you get back on your feet, please apply. If you're a veteran, please apply for benefits. You served our country, you did what was asked of you. If you should have benefits, you should have benefits. Please take the time to learn about the benefits that are available to you for both folks that never served and folks that did serve. Particularly for our veterans, there are a lot of different benefits. There are ones I didn't touch on. There's also the burial benefits. There are other benefits in addition to that. It's not just through VA, there's also some through private organizations. I don't know if you knew, but you guys and women are the most able to get service dogs if you're disabled, so you can check into that. There's a lot of benefits, but everyone should know. And it's not your fault if you don't, but look into it now. You should know what's there for you if the worst happens, because none of us is guarded from waking up tomorrow with a life-threatening illness or injury, getting into that car wreck. You know, the things that change lives in a second that we don't plan, and that we don't want to ever happen, so we don't think about it, start thinking about it. Because it's happened to me, it's happened to others, it can happen to you too. You may or may not ever get back on your feet, but you want everything to be in place in case this happens. Because the other thing too is there may not be people there who are able or can or want to take care of you. Make sure you're taken care of before the worst happens. Know your rights.
That's so important. Those are such great pointers. Now, can you tell everybody about the services that you provide?
So, like I said, I'm out here in the Pacific. It is solely because of the need, because there's so much need. I solely do Hawaii and the territories and the Philippines and the countries in the Pacific because everything goes through Honolulu. In most cases, I'm the only one who does. With Social Security, there's a couple other attorneys on the ground here. And when I say I'm the only one that does, I'm the only one on the ground who's going to all these places. So I could pop up where you are if you're listening from the territories or the Philippines or Australia or Korea or Japan. I do pop up in those places periodically. But yeah, the services I provide, my goal is to make sure that everyone is comfortable and taken care of and gets to stay in their homes here in the islands and in these countries. And in our country, I want the Hawaiians to be able to stay in Hawaii. I want the Chamorans to be able to stay in Guam and the Northern Marianas if they want to. The Samoans to be able to stay in American Samoa. I want everyone to have what it is they need if the worst happens and they become disabled. So I provide these services throughout the Pacific, and I do it in person where the need arises.
I love it. I love it. Well, where can people find you if they need, if they want to look, get some, your services and they want to learn more about a lot of these different topics we discussed today? Where can people find you?
The best place to find me, you can look me up on my website, which is, of course, www.hawaiidisabilitylegal.com. You're always welcome to call. We have the convenient 800 number, so 888-557-9789. We also have the convenient Hawaii-based number, 808-536-8074. You are always welcome to reach out through LinkedIn, through Facebook, Hawaii Disability Legal, through Instagram. Whatever is the most convenient to you, just reach out to us. We're happy to answer your questions. You can reach out through Google, you can reach out through Avvo, you can reach out through Yelp. Any way you want to reach out, we're here to answer your questions. We're here to help you out. I will stress, it really is, I can only represent people in Hawaii and in the Pacific, and that really is just limited because there is so much need, and there's only so many of us out here in the Hawaii office. But I always like to say, answering questions is always free. So if you need help, just feel free to reach out. We're here for you.
I love that. I love that. This has been amazing, Diane. I thank you so much for coming on this show. I hope you'll be back because there's so many topics that we could really dive into. There's so many things. We talked about a lot of different issues today, and we touched base on a lot of really important factors that people probably didn't even know about. But you have such great knowledge, and I think people really need to know more about what's out there and what they need to do. Because I feel just from my own experience, just seeing others, a lot of people don't know what's available to them. A lot of people don't know what to do. A lot of people don't have people helping them because they just don't have those people in their lives, and they just, they don't know where to go. So, someone like yourself is so valuable to have, and I thank you so much for what you're doing and how you're helping the veterans and how you're making such a difference in so many people's lives, who suffer with a disability and are suffering financially and really need that extra help and guidance. So thank you so much for what you do, and thank you just for being you. I really do appreciate you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me on. I am glad to get the word out there because I do want people to know what they're entitled to, and particularly folks, on the outskirts of the US, who may not have access to as much information as folks do on the mainland, I want everyone to know that there is help out there if they need it. So thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, you're so very welcome. Well, you have a great day.
You too. Thank you.